US stocks are back on the rise, driven no doubt by the feeding frenzy that is the earnings season. Tesla has just reported. We'll look at that today. Plus PMI, some strong numbers coming from Europe. Some BOE bankers trying to put us off our scent on early rate cuts. And Aussie CPI numbers today. What are we expecting and what would be worrying? It's Wednesday, the 24th of April, 2024. It's the morning call from NAB. Good morning. Well, it was another good session for US stocks, a 1.6% rise in the NASDAQ at close, still 2% down from where it was on the 9th of April, of course. The S&P is up 1.2%, a 0.7% rise in the Dow, and small caps doing as well. It's not just big tech. The Russell 2000 up 1.8% this morning. Meanwhile, the Euro Stoxx 50 up 1.4%, back over 5,000. And bond yields today falling in the US, rising in Europe, but small moves we're talking about, down 1 basis point for 10-year treasuries, up 2 for 10-year bunds, but up 4 for 10-year gilts in the UK, a 0.4% fall in the US dollar. That's helping push the Aussie up another 0.6% to 64.9 US cents. The euro is up 0.5%. The pound is up over 0.8%. And oil climbing back up as well, a 1.8% rise in WTI, 1.7% for Brent, over $88.40 a barrel now. It's NAB's Taylor Nugent in Melbourne on the morning call today. So what do you make of equities? Have they got further to go, seeing this rise over the last couple of days? Are we seeing investors buying the dip and it'll all pull back again? Or are you going to avoid making any call whatsoever on equity markets right now? I wouldn't blame you if you do. You're allowed to do that. You can take that option if you want.
Yeah, I mean, no strong views about the direction of equities from here from me. But yeah, I think just in terms of what we've seen over the last 24 hours, you know, again, a bit of an improvement extending that that recent rebound that we've seen in kind of, you know, big tech and the Magnificent Seven. And I think that, you know, while the other market movements we'll talk about today, I think the PMIs and the softer PMIs that we saw in the US were important. I think it's very much an earnings focus in the US. We've got some other big names, including Meta and Microsoft reporting and Alphabet as well, reporting before the end of the week. So I think, yeah, what we're seeing in equities at the moment is pretty earnings season focus, and we'll see whether they can, you know, meet the reasonably lofty expectations for earnings increases.
Right. So you mentioned what their PMIs did in the US, but in Europe it was the other way, wasn't it? Because German services, for example, rose a fair bit from 50.1 to 53.3. That was a bit of a surprise. But manufacturing grows less than expected. In fact, the euro area generally, manufacturing fell from 46.1 to 45.6. It was expected to climb a little. So softer European data generally, except for that German services number. So a bit mixed.
Yeah, I think the Eurozone PMIs were okay. As you say, manufacturing still somewhat sluggish and really held down by Germany there, kind of mired in the low 40s. The German manufacturing PMI remains at 42.7. But yeah, we did see a bit of improvement across services. In Germany, again, the services PMI much stronger than manufacturing, up at 53.3. So a pretty stark divergence still there between that pulse of business activity on the services side compared to manufacturing in Germany. And, you know, across the Eurozone more broadly in these preliminary numbers, we don't get a huge amount of granular detail by country. But, you know, S&P Global, who publishes the PMIs, did note that there's, you know, once again, kind of especially solid growth outside of the largest economies, France and Germany. And so, you know, it's certainly not out and out strength here, but I think, you know, there are some encouraging signs from the Eurozone PMIs that there is some more positive news coming through on that growth impulse.
So Spain, Italy, places like that. But also the UK outside the Eurozone these days, well, it never was in the Eurozone, but outside Europe. So manufacturing came in lower. The flash PMI 48.7. So that's back in contraction territory. So that's not so good, but they don't have a lot of manufacturing. Services, the main bit of the economy, climb more than expected, up to 54.9 from 53.1 last time. So that's a good strong number for the UK.
Yeah. So, you know, once again, a reasonably positive sign, and certainly suggests that you know, that the worst of that softness and growth that we saw through the back half of 2023 does look to be in the past, and the momentum is picking up a little bit. The PMIs there showing the kind of fastest expansion in almost a year in the UK economy. And I think that, you know, that kind of potential improvement in momentum in activity. You know, it speaks to some of the risks of persistence in inflation as well. And we had some comments from...
We did, yeah. So Hugh Pill doing the bitter pill. I mean, they are definitely playing hot and cold with us, aren't they, the Bank of England? Because we were, you know, thinking rate cuts were going to come sooner. And then Hugh Pill and Jonathan Haskell basically both saying, well, no, we think rate cuts are a way off.
Yeah. So we've had, you know, recent comments from Bailey and Ramsden as well, just kind of suggesting that, you know, that confidence that inflation would be kind of returning to sustainably to target was increasing, and the Bank of England would be moving towards cuts. Hugh Pill, you know, a little bit more cautious overnight. He said that, you know, he's cautious about cutting too soon. He sees the risks of moving too early should inflation prove to be persistent as greater than moving a bit more slowly. And, you know, he did kind of give a warning as well, you know, the further decrease in headline inflation in the UK to kind of around 2% in the April numbers is kind of well expected, but he kind of cautioned against getting overexcited by that. And, you know, he certainly prefers a relatively cautious approach and pointing to kind of those core measures. And he's not seeing anything in the data to make him think that kind of that, you know, what he called squeezing the persistent component of inflation out of the inflationary backdrop. He's not seeing any reason to think that's happening more rapidly or profoundly than he expected 6 months ago. So, you know, we did see a bit of a reaction in market pricing for that. We saw about 4 basis points of cuts taken out of the June meeting. But markets now still looking at about 50% price by June and a full cut fully priced by August. So I think, you know, there just needs to be a little bit more data under the bridge to get, you know, a good chunk of the MPC members on board with starting that cutting cycle.
Right, now we can get to the US. I know you've been itching to talk about the US PMIs. Both manufacturing and services fell. So it wasn't good news, was it? Manufacturing just below 50 from 51.9 last time. So back in contraction territory. Services that were expected to lift a little, they fell a little. So yeah, soft data all around. And then that was compounded by a softer than expected Richmond Fed services index as well.
Yeah. And, you know, we usually talk about kind of the ISMs in the US getting the most focus there. But, you know, it certainly looks like in the last 24 hours, it was the US data that kind of did generate a little bit of a market reaction relative to, say, the European numbers. And as you say, kind of, you know, a bit of softness across the board there, you know, not kind of especially weak levels. But, you know, we saw in the March ISM as well, that kind of softer services number and that kind of signal is continuing to come through in the PMIs overnight. You know, the manufacturing PMI at just below 50 at 49.9. The service sector PMI also kind of undershooting expectations, only just above 50. And also there, bit of a fall in the employment index on the services side, which, you know, is suggesting some softening in payrolls going forward, and also kind of a decline in new orders in April and across both manufacturing and services. So all of that, you know, it does kind of add to that list of leading indicators, survey data and other things that kind of is painting a bit of a different picture to what we're seeing out of the payrolls data, what is expected to come out of US GDP data for the first quarter published on Thursday. All of the, you know, a lot of kind of leading indicators and survey data is suggesting that things should be slowing in the US, and that kind of long-awaited rebalancing towards kind of, you know, that US exceptionalism, very strength in growth, especially relative to you know, the broader economy and especially the Eurozone PMIs overnight, continuing to suggest that, you know, that gap of outperformance from the US should be closing. But, you know, it's interesting. We are just going to need to wait to see it confirmed in the hard data to kind of have any confidence that that is actually flowing through. On the inflation side as well, there's some, you know, some differences opening up as well. Kind of, you know, we heard from Guindos last night, the June ECB meeting. He called that a cut there, a fait accompli, assuming no surprises between now and then. But, you know, there is a little bit of you know, maybe a little bit of reason to think that they will be cautious through the cutting cycle as well. Price pressures picked up a little bit in the Eurozone PMIs. That contrasts with the US, where kind of final prices were softer on both the manufacturing and services side. And interestingly, you know, that theme of the kind of recent increases that we've seen across kind of commodity prices feeding through into manufacturing input prices, those aren't translating to the same extent into output prices. And so, you know, that once again suggests that, you know, potentially there has been a bit of a shift in that inflationary environment, a bit more difficult to get input cost increases away downstream than it was, say, 12 months ago.
Hey, we have had one central bank cutting rates, Hungary, a full 50 basis points down to 7.75%. Now, 7.75% seems quite high. Let's remember it was 13% in October for more than a year. But they've got their inflation rate down to 3.6%. It peaked at 26%. So there we are. There's a textbook example of monetary policy in extremis working if you deal with very big numbers. Not that I think we'd necessarily want to model any economy on the Hungarian economy, but there we are. There's still interest in US treasuries. We saw that overnight, didn't we? $69 billion sale of two-year notes. That went off without a hitch.
Reasonably strong demand there. Kind of, you know, bid to cover ratio reasonably healthy, and the yield on those bonds, you know, it's marginally below the kind of prevailing yield in the market. Going ahead of that, you know, I don't think it kind of had too much impact on kind of, you know, market moves on the day. Kind of yields in that 2 year space had already fallen, kind of, you know, down around 5 basis points or so on the back of that data, but certainly suggesting, you know, no shortage of demand around these sorts of levels. And we've got a, you know, a pretty big 5 year auction coming up in the day ahead as well.
And lunchtime today, Australian inflation for Q1. I assume this, I mean, you know, what are we expecting? Could it influence the Australian dollar? Could it influence the RBA? They're the questions.
Yes, is the answer. This is the full quarterly CPI. So it's, you know, much more important than, and, you know, a much kind of broader read. We get that kind of full suite of disaggregated data. It's you know, you can much more reliably kind of tear it apart and look at those subcomponents for what's the pulse of domestic pressure, what's the kind of the aggregate services pressure, these kinds of indicators that the RBA is focused on for whether that kind of domestic inflation backdrop, whether they are making progress on that. Expectations there are kind of pretty tightly clustered for the quarterly trim mean around 0.8 and 0.9%. Consensus has landed at a 0.8. We're at a 0.9, but we have, you know, flagged some downside risk to that estimate as well. You know, unrounded, we're at 0.86 for the trim mean. So, you know, that all of that to say, we don't, you know, particularly disagree with where consensus is, even though we have landed on the side of a 0.9 for trim mean. The RBA was at 0.8 in their February meeting. So I think overall, a number kind of near consensus there, that would say to the RBA that inflation about as bad, maybe marginally worse, but than what they were expecting. But, you know, we're not expecting anything that would cause them to rewrite their near-term inflation outlook and kind of change their assessment that the below trend growth that we're seeing is, you know, gradually feeding through into some very slow progress on the still too high inflation backdrop. A surprise there, you know, look at where market pricing is. There's barely two cuts priced out to the end of 2025. I think, you know, persistence and stubborn inflation pressures is much better reflected in the price than a fast fall away of the domestic inflation backdrop. So, you know, while that's not our forecast, we expect it to show, you know, pretty stubborn pressures and still work to do and still a need to hold rates in kind of modestly restrictive territory for some time yet. You know, the potential for a surprise there, given where market pricing is, might be for, you know, a lower print to get people excited that the RBA will actually be in a position to cut through 2025.
Right. Well, fingers crossed on that. Of course, you know, if it is a surprising result, we'll just say, well, okay, but we'll want to see another one, won't we? Or the RBA would, anyway, that's for
yes,
sure.
Yes, yes. None of that's to suggest that they, you know, even if we do get a slight surprise today, they'll be, you know, turning the corner and delivering cuts and anytime soon. I think, you know, late this year at the earliest, given the, you know, the resilience in the labour market that we've seen and, you know, there's still, you know, plenty of inflation pressures there in the backdrop, even as things are improving.
They're in no hurry, that's for sure. Yeah, German IFO, business climate, conditions, expectations, all of those numbers are out today. Business confidence for Italy, US mortgage applications, durable goods orders for the United States for March, that'll be interesting, and retail sales for Canada as well. The week is definitely hotting up for data, isn't it?
It is, yes, yes. And worth noting as well, kind of, you know, we're not here tomorrow morning, but US GDP out on Thursday night will be pretty important as well. That's kind of, you know, the pick of the week for the data, and durable goods orders will probably be, you know, viewed with a lens to what it means for that first quarter inflation data, activity data in the US.
Right, okay. Well, also the Bank of Canada summary of deliberations out tomorrow morning, which you can peruse at your leisure. And we're picking a bad day to be off. We've got a lot of catching up to do on Friday, haven't we, with those US GDP numbers. But look, we're just getting the numbers through as well from Tesla. So 45 pence per cent, I should say, per share. The estimate was 52 earnings per share. They did talk about a new vehicle lineup. They're saying still slower growth for 2024, notably slower than the growth rate in 2023, but their teams are working on the launch of new, more affordable models, the next generation of vehicles, and also the battery business, which they're expecting to outstrip vehicle revenue. So Q1 revenue, $21.3 billion. The estimates were $22.3 billion. So on the downside for that. And the gross margin, 17.4% against estimates of 16.5%. So a beat on that, at least. And in fact, the share price up in the immediate after-hours trade by over 6%. Earlier today, not big tech, but we also had Spotify. They saw revenue in Q1 go from $3.04 billion, slightly different, isn't it, to $3.64 billion. But that was a slight beat, but it shows subscription services seem to be doing okay. I don't think I could survive without Spotify. Look, IBM, Meta, Qualcomm, after the close tomorrow at this time. Sadly, we won't be here because we are off for Anzac Day, but we're back on Friday. So for now, thanks, Taylor.
Thanks, Bill.
And I hope you get the most out of Anzac Day, however you do choose to celebrate or commemorate. And I am back, as I say, on Friday. I'm Phil Dobby for NAB. Thanks for listening in today.